welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Today's special guest is Justin Brookhart. You might not have heard his name, but you're definitely going to see his work. Justin's the executive director of Blink, which is not this weekend, but next. And he is going to give us all of the details, the must-see events, what it's like to put together a big, huge, you know, all-city Northern Kentucky event. And let's see if we can get out of him if it's ever going to happen again, not to get ahead of ourselves.
You know, I think our discussion with Justin is going to be enlightening.
Oh, I see what you did there. I think I need more caffeine, you guys.
Oh, okay. I had to do it.
So, but before we get to talking about what, I mean, I really have been looking forward to a long time, you know, really something that's been dominating the news is, you know, not something I wish we didn't have to talk about, but is something that we do need to talk about, which is pedestrian safety, particularly in the city of Cincinnati, although it is an issue in a lot of areas.
And particularly around the university area.
Yes. Yes.
So we had reporter Cam Knight dig into this a little bit. I mean, there were two, in August, there were two fatal car versus pedestrian accidents, one in Avondale, one in Hyde Park. And then last week we had the fatal hit and run.
With the young woman.
With the
18-year-old.
18-year-old woman at the university. And just in Cam's story, just the week prior to that, in the same area, the same intersection almost, there was another car versus pedestrian accident where two were injured, thankfully not fatally. But, you know, Cam's been digging into this and found out that according to the Highway Patrol, who keeps track of this data, that in the city just since 2017, there have been 103 car pedestrian accidents. So think about that. It's about one every 3 weeks, someone's getting hit by a car. So apparently, the city is starting to dig into this a little bit as well.
You know, this is really, it's not brand new, but it's really starting to come to fruition now because a lot of the council members, when they were campaigning last year, took office in January, really saw this as an issue, what's happening on our streets. And they have made this a big priority at City Hall, but we're starting to see what's happening. And, you know, we just saw this week, we saw the city is, they're so tired of waiting on things that they're starting what they're calling a new pedestrian safety crew. Now, it's like, what is that? But when there are problems on our roads, like it's so city, like red tape, bureaucracy, that they're like, okay, well, we should do this project and we should approve this project and we should bid out this project. Those are the rules of the state. And I certainly want them to follow them. But they are trying to cut through the red tape to get these projects done. So they're starting, you know, in-house. Because you don't have, if you do the work yourself and you're not, you don't have to bid out the projects and take all of this long time to do things. You can just get things done much quicker and they say much more fiscally responsibly. It'll be cheaper to just do the work. Like, okay, we have a problem. Let's go out and do the work. So I actually love this idea because, you know, quick, you don't want to wait and say, oh, well, this street's dangerous, and then somebody else gets hit. You want to, you know, have – and neighborhoods want these problems fixed immediately. So it was like a 1-2 punch. We saw this memo where they said they were going to do this, and they put out a second memo, and they were like, here's a construction update. Like, all the things they've done, these curb bump outs, these really special new marked crosswalks, speed cushions. They're trying to slow down traffic and they're trying to get ahead of this. And so the city is really, this is the biggest initiative I've seen from the city with this whole new council of really, this is what they said they're going to do and this is what they're doing. I mean, they've done a lot of things. They've been spending some of this like ARP money from the government and doing good things in the city, but this is their planning. They're, you know, getting things done. They're initiating of what's happening here. And so it is good to see. And I think there's a lot of answers that the neighborhoods are looking for. I do want to say the fiscal year 23, because remember the city, you know, the budgets, can never forget this. The budgets are due on June 30th, although at least they're not due at Christmas time like they used to be. There are cities asking for pedestrian safety submissions. Now, your neighborhood, you know, community council knows about this, but the submissions are due to the Department of Transportation right now, basically. But they're asking people to say, you know, what they're thinking about and what the problems that they see. And so the next projects that get done are what real people want. to, you know, see fixed in the problems. And so we'll see kind of what comes out of that. But, you know, it looks speed is of the essence is my takeaway from reading these memos.
Speed as far as getting things done.
Speed is getting things done, yes.
Not
yes,
driving faster, yes. Yeah.
We're making really bad puns today, I think.
I think people who have been in other cities, and we have a few of them here, but those well-marked crosswalks that have big flashing lights that are automatic, if, you know, they have the ability to detect people in the crosswalk. You don't have to push a button. Because a lot of our, you know, the hotspots that were listed in Cam's story, we already talked about the area around the university. Basically, Calhoun Street and West McMillan, you know, two one-way streets, and you have those big intersections. One is Clifton Avenue, one is Vine. A lot of cars, a lot of pedestrians, a lot of activity there. And I think even if people take the time to use the crosswalks, they're not well marked. They're not very visible. And there's just a lot of students, a lot of people going to those businesses that are needing to cross the street. So I think that's the obvious hotspot. The other one, Liberty Street, between Central Parkway and Walnut Street, and then Warsaw Avenue. Those are the three hotspots. And I think part of it is better crosswalks. But I think part of it, too, is, you know, some of these accidents have been hit and runs. So people who are speeding, people who have, you know, no regard for the safety of others. And that's sad to see. So I don't think, you know, the task force and everything they're doing is not going to eliminate all of them, because there's still going to be people that just drive too quickly. There's still going to be people trying to run across the street, not in a crosswalk. But I think when you list what can be done, I think this is a good first start. And did I hear you say this is probably one of the biggest projects that they've actually embarked
on? That I've seen. Kind of that's my opinion. Like
your opinion.
My assessment.
You're allowed to interject your opinion here.
This is like this big coordinated effort that's more than just, you know, this one-off thing that we're doing, one thing. And it's, you know, really taking a big look at the 52 neighborhoods. I will say on the hit and run, I mean, I used to cover courts a long time ago from, you know, 2003 to 2008. And this is just my perception. I don't remember hit and run. This was back in a time when I covered courts every day, all day. I lived at the courthouse. There was no laptops and cell phones. God, I'm so old, Laurel. But I covered everything. And I would cover whatever, you know, these fatal crashes. And I would see what was happening in all the court cases. And I do not remember them being just a hit and run was an anomaly that I would cover like as big, huge news, because it never happened. The people were leaving the scene of accidents. And I just feel like we just have seen so much, and it's hard to even fathom, honestly.
It is. Well, we'll keep everybody posted on that. That'll be a big story for us to follow.
Yes.
I.e. you to follow.
Oh, I know. I already know this. All right, you guys, let's bring in Justin, and let's talk about something fun. Let's talk about Blink. Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. TikTok, we're counting down to Blink. I'm so excited. And so we're bringing the person who's responsible for everything, no pressure, in for today's special guest session. And so we can hear about all the things directly about Blink. We've been writing about it for a while now, but it is so close. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here. It is so close, and we are so excited.
All right. So we're recording on Tuesday. How many days do we have?
Oh, gosh. We're 9 days away at this point. And a few hours. We count every hour. Yeah.
Do you have a countdown on your phone?
We do indeed. There's a countdown on the website. And it's usually, you know, the good reality check for us is go on there and figure out how much work we can get done in that time. Yeah.
All right. Is it the kind of event where it goes down to the wire?
I think certain aspects do. You know, this is an interesting week to be talking to you, because myself and the rest of the partners and the whole production technical team that's been working on Blink for, you know, many months now, this is the week where like the staff list really grows. So we have production partners that are in town. We have a lot of our local labor that's kind of being assembled. The mural artists that have flown in for the event are up on walls and up on their scaffolding and their lifts starting to paint this week. And so this is at one point a very busy week for overall Blink. But for me, it's the time when like our capacity has grown so much that like I just get to marvel and like the scale and the spectacle and get to share a little bit about the excitement that's happening. So yeah, this has been a pretty fun week so far.
So let's give everybody a little bit of background. This is your first Blink, yeah, right?
That's right, yeah.
So you came here from Austin having coordinated big other like national events. And what made you want to come to Cincinnati?
Oh my gosh, what a great question. So like you said, I've never attended a Blink before. I first heard about Blink from some friends of ours here in Northern Kentucky area. My wife went to school at University of Kentucky. She's originally from the Dayton area and just has a few close friends here in Cincinnati. And it was back in 2019 at the second Blink that we were at home on our couch in Austin, Texas, and just saw on their social media them sharing this gigantic public art event. And I knew nothing about Blink at the time. I'd never heard anything about it. But I saw one image in particular of just a large mass gathering of people that were outside in between the Aronoff Center and the CAC. And they were just like kind of bathed in a glow of like illuminated light. And I was just so impressed by the scale that like that many people would show out for a gigantic public event. So I started following Blink on social media and said, what is this thing? And told my wife, Erin, I said, we got to get ourselves to Cincinnati the next time they do this event.
Obviously, to see it.
Yeah.
To see it.
To see it.
Never intending, did you know.
Yeah. Never intending to pick up our whole life and move it to Cincinnati to help bring it back. But I was just kind of hooked because, you know, I looked at the quality and scale of the event. I looked at the level of collaborators, both here locally and some of the international artists and national mural artists that were brought in for the event. And I was just really impressed. And so I started becoming a fan just from afar. And last year, when I saw the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber post about wanting to bring in the first executive director to, you know, help lead the charge to bring the event back, you know, I raised my hand and said, I'd love to, you know, discuss this opportunity. And so moved to Cincinnati with my wife, Erin. Let's see, it would be 8 months and 5 days ago.
Oh, my goodness. So, okay.
Yeah, it's an easy date for me to remember because it was January 29th. It was the day before the Bengals AFC Championship game. So
spoken like a true Cincinnatian. That's so Cincinnati.
Yeah,
that's true, actually.
It was a good time to join the city. Listen, a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. And so, yeah, we got here and it's been nonstop, you know, making Blink happen ever since.
I mean, I did forget about that. Like, we went to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And we're having a Blink all in 1 year.
It's a big year.
The city's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So the fact that the chamber hired an executive director for Blink, I think, probably sends a signal that this is an event that they are fully invested in and want to keep going. But it is, you know, it's only – this will be the third Blink. Was there any apprehension on your end about, boy, this is, you know, still kind of a fledgling thing, an idea? Am I going to be all in or not? What was that like to decide to,
yeah,
to take that kind of unproven role?
Yeah, from like a personal and like professional standpoint, I think, you know, my wife would certainly tell you it's something we talked a lot about, right? You know, picking up our lives and moving. I'm a native Texan, born and raised outside of Dallas and lived in Austin for about the last 12 years. You know, leaving home is a big deal, but it was also a little bit of a return home for my wife, Erin, you know, being from this area and having a lot of friends here. And it was also just an incredible opportunity. I'll be honest, I feel very blessed with the opportunity to come here and get to lead an event that so many people care about. Like I said, the fact that like over 1.25 million people attended this event in 2019 and only its second year tells me that something special is going on like with this event and with this brand and with this region. The fact that that many people care about a public art event says that, hey, this is something that I feel like is worth kind of taking that leap and saying, hey, we'll, you know, change our life to move here and be a part of this thing. So, you know, we're loving it. Talk to me in like 2 weeks about how I'm feeling about it, you know. Just kidding. I truly mean that. I think it's an honor to take something like this. I often use, coming from Austin, the South by Southwest analogy a whole lot when talking about this event, and that South by Southwest started as just an independent music festival, right? And since then it's grown into so much more: international film festival, thought leadership conferences, eco education. There's so many different things, but really what it's become is this thing that's kind of helped shaped and defined, you know, know, a region, certainly helped grow, you know, the economic impact of that community and really helped develop the brand of Austin. I'm not saying Blink's going to be all those things, but I think it has potential to grow and evolve over time. But you're totally right in that this thing's only taken place twice before, in 2017 and 2019. So we still have no idea what, like, long term this is going to be. But I'm excited that the Chamber is interested in investing in, you know, the long term impact of this thing.
Because I know that's like the question I wanted to ask. Well, are we going to have it again? But I feel like that is jumping ahead of things.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'd say that's certainly the goal. You know, one of the questions I get often is, you know, is Blink ever going to be an annual thing? Is that something, you know, we can do? And, you know, candidly, like, producing an event at this scale is something that takes a long lead time. It takes a long lead time from a production standpoint, operations, certainly a creative standpoint, from a fundraising standpoint. Obviously, you know, keeping this a free and accessible event means we have to go out there and we have to get money from several places in order to make it happen. We're probably a ways off from the big spectacle event being an annual thing. But I do think one of the fun challenges for myself and the producing partners on Blink is figuring out how the brand can live on past just that four-day experience every 2 years. So are there off-season years that we can do? Is there something we could do in 2023 to still show up in this community, still have something that represents the spirit of Blink that maybe isn't the big, you know, big spectacle show, but is still something that people can celebrate and be a part of? I want people to feel like the impact of Blink well beyond just that 4 days every 2 years.
Well, and I think that ties back into, you were talking about South by Southwest, that, you know, started small and grew and, you know, added the tech component and just a bunch of, I would say, like, associated events built around it. Do you think Blink has the potential to, you know, I'm just going to throw ideas out, but,
sure,
you know, have a conference attached to it and be a place where, you know, the art community meets the tech community?
Absolutely. I think that's a huge goal for us. I mean, we are a very art forward and obviously a very technology forward event. That's the only way we're able to produce an event at the scale that we do, is through incredible technology and creative, you know, collaborations. So we talked, myself and the partners at Agar, Ish, Cincy Nice, the team at the Hale Foundation, talk about how we can, you know, evolve this thing. And the idea of thought leadership conferences comes up pretty often. So that could be one way that you see Blink showing up in those off-season years. Are there ways that we can, you know, maybe travel with elements of this to other events? Are there ways that we can bring people together around those themes that you talk about, technology and art, here for some conference style, you know, speaker series? I think that's all on the table for us right now.
So let's do a little bit of Blink by the numbers.
Yeah.
So the map came out yesterday.
Gosh.
It goes from where to where?
So we started in our most northern point up at Hanna Park, up in the northern part of our Findlay Market area, and then traveling down through Findlay Market, crossing Liberty into the OTR region, downtown Central Business District, finishing up at the Banks and Smale Riverfront Park here in Cincinnati. And then we literally crossed the bridge over into northern Kentucky, crossing the Roebling Bridge into our Covington zone. And, you know, we really wanted to kind of connect the Covington zone from that, you know, from that kind of Roebling Point area all the way into the Main Strasse area. So we're, you know, bringing some installations over there and just really wanting to make sure that this feels like an event that is, you know, an experience. It is something you get out, you walk around, you know, you see as much or as little as you really like to. And so, as you can see on that map, there's lots of dots and lots of experiences. We're excited that there's technically over 100 things to see and do. Those are just the officially programmed things, I should add, to, or things that are with adjacent or partner organizations. One of the things that we're really excited about this year is we've really been trying to invite and encourage people to see their way into the event through, you know, unofficial things, you know, alternative programming. Again, that South by Southwest model is a big one for us, where there's the core event of South by Southwest, but then there's everything else that gets produced around it. So we're excited that there's just other things going on that weekend at, you know, bars, restaurants, galleries, neighboring organizations that are just taking place around that weekend so that people can really make the most out of it. So a whole lot of official things to do that you can see on that map, and then a whole lot of other things that I think are going on to make the city extra vibrant that weekend.
So, I mean, there's a Blink bike ride kind of on Wednesday.
That's a great example,
even though Blink,
right,
technically kicks off on Thursday night with the parade.
Yeah.
I hope there's not a Blink 5K, because Keith Pandolfi will be very upset. He's like, can't we do anything in the city without having to exercise?
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
I tried
funny.
To explain to him that just is an entry point into drinking, but he seemed to think that we should just drink in the morning without exercise.
You run so you have the excuse. Yeah, I think that's true. I ran in the Bachfest.
This is what set him off.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just like, oh, afterwards, I'm not sure I need a beer at 8:30. But listen, if that's your thing, go for it.
it's the Cincinnati way.
I love it.
So I have to tell you, I stumbled into Blink year one.
Okay.
I wasn't even living here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I hadn't moved back yet from D.C.
I feel like you've been here longer than that.
I love these stories. Go ahead.
No. And well, it gets even better because I was going to be here. It was just like the week before I became editor of the Enquirer. And I wasn't even sure I was going to be editor of the Enquirer, but I was here that weekend to talk to people. And I went out on a date, okay, with Lauren.
Oh, right? My goodness.
First date.
His wife.
First date.
Wow.
And we didn't even plan to go to Blink. We were having dinner downtown. And she just casually mentioned, yeah, there's some light festival happening, you know. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so I pick her up. She lived in Bellevue at the time. And coming across the bridge into downtown, it was gridlock. And people were out walking, and there were these lights, and there was this giant thing. And we went into 21C to grab a drink before dinner.
Sure.
And I was just taking it all in. I'm like, little light show, this is fantastic. This is amazing.
We didn't understand because we had nobody been used to luminosity.
And I think even the organizers were caught off guard about how many people came down and participated in 2017. At least that's, you know, Brendan will say, oh, we knew it was going to be fantastic. But
wait, is Brendan your boss? Will be nice.
Brendan Cole at the Cincinnati Regional Chamber is my boss. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but please go ahead. I love Brendan's stories.
Yeah. Brendan acted like, you know, oh, well, we totally expected this to be off the chain. But when I cornered Jill Meyer, she was like, yeah, we were surprised in a good way. So I think that it's one of those events that defies description. You almost have to be down in the middle of it to appreciate it.
I think you're so right about that. And again, as someone that hasn't experienced it for the first time, but is someone that's going out there and trying to invite, encourage more people to attend it for the first time, right? We're doing a whole lot to try to get people that haven't attended here in this region, and then also trying to get a lot of, you know, tourism business to come in for the event. We're candidly trying to court future sponsors to come in and experience the event for the first time. And you can verbally describe it to people. You can show pictures and videos, but so many people tell me until you're standing there on the sidewalk next to, you know, friends, neighbors, strangers, whatever it is, and looking up at a giant building that's illuminated and by incredible artists, like you don't understand what that like communal, like immersive art experience is really like. So you're getting me excited because I still haven't experienced it.
Well, yeah. And the communal part of it, I think, is the key to it, because you can go into a museum and, you know, but when you're out on the street walking around and there's like you said, you know, participating restaurants and bars just for people to meet and gather before they start walking around, and, you know, running into people you haven't seen for a while and just kind of like taking it in with total strangers and everybody ooing and aahing at the same time. But the self-exploration nature of it is kind of unique too, where, like you said, you can, you know, spend a half hour, you can spend, you know, dusk till dawn probably.
No, and it's true art because it speaks to people in a different way. Like the last time I spent a lot of time at the courthouse because I used to cover courts, and on the state courthouse, they told a story, a criminal justice story in the lights. And you like, I just let people go without me because I wanted to spend more time there because it was really, it meant something to me personally. And then, but there was different parts.
I think that's so great. You know, I think you all touched on like one of the themes we talk about a lot with this event as organizers is just the idea of discovery, right? You're discovering art, certainly artists, maybe for the first time, but you're also maybe discovering, you know, a building you haven't taken a look at or haven't looked at in a while. You're discovering a block or an alleyway or whatever it is, but like you're discovering like a, you know, dense downtown kind of, you know, urban core environment in a really interesting way. And you're doing it amongst other people. So you're also kind of discovering a little bit of community, we hope, along the way too, of other people that care about this event.
Do you have any insider tips? Like,
oh gosh, yeah.
So like, just for our listeners, right? Like you should do Over the Rhine this night. You should do downtown. You should do Covington, and like dividing it up. Like what's insider tip? What do you
insider tips? You know, I get this question a lot, even just from friends of mine here, of just like, all right, how should I plan my weekend and everything? That's a lot of my personal text messages right now are just like, hey, tell me what to do.
Friends with you,
exactly. Listen,
out of
I get it. I get it. So my biggest thing is just find where your starting point is, right? So pick a zone that you want to start at. The mural paintings are like something that you care a lot about, I recommend starting in the Finley Zone because that's where the highest concentration of that area is. If you're looking into more of the large-scale projection installations, I'd recommend checking out downtown or the OTR Zone because that's where a lot of those are concentrated. The Banks area is where a lot of kind of the interactive installations, light-based installations that you can walk around, kind of immerse yourself in, walk through. That's where those are. The Banks and the Covington Riverfront area is where you can view art our drone show, which we're bringing to Blink for the first time this year. 300 drones being brought over the Ohio River just west of the Roebling Bridge, all four nights of Blink, two shows every night.
Wait, pause.
How many
drones?
So we have 300 drones that are going to be launched, like I said, twice a night, all four nights of Blink.
Burl's thinking about this because the Enquirer does
Can our drone fly through and cause happen? No.
Yeah. I would say no.
I would hope not. But yes, I would talk to FAA on that. Yeah, no, we're so excited.
But he understands. So, it's a lot of logistics.
Oh, so for those who haven't seen a drone show, explain what that's like.
Sure. So essentially what it is, it's, 300 drones flying in formations for about 10 to 12 total minutes. And essentially what they do, these are light up drones that are synced to one another that are meant to illuminate and form different shapes and artistic interpretations. Blink's really taking that artistically driven approach to drone shows. And so a lot of what you'll see will be a lot of like artistic form and movement and color themed all around, Blink. But
so is this something where the drones are all programmed?
That's
or
right.
Are there 300 pilots having to execute
no,
this?
No, great question. So there are a couple pilots who work on this. We're working with a team based out of Dallas called Sky Elements. They do drone shows all over the country, and they're coming in with their professional crew that fly them. They're synced to talk to one another and synced to be programmed. They're actually being programmed right now, and I'm getting a little preview of that programming tomorrow during our production meeting with them. And essentially, yeah, what they do is they launch, and then they fly in these formations for about 10 to 12 total minutes. We're going to have several different formations, and in addition to like the objects that they form, there's a lot of movement and how they form these. And so it's going to be a really fun experience. I recommend everyone checking it out. When thinking about this, we've thought about drone shows in the past at previous year's Blinks, but again, we wanted to do it at the quality and scale we thought it deserved. And so we didn't want to just do one drone show for one night. So we had to find a provider that could hit that need for us of, all four nights of Blink, multiple shows each night, and really execute on it really well. And we think we found that partner, and we're excited to light up the skies for the first time.
Will the bridges be lighted up like the last time, mm-hmm. or is the drones kind of in place of that?
Yeah, the drone shows a little bit of our answer to the Roebling experience that you may have seen in 2019. So we literally lit up the historic Roebling Bridge in 2019 and brought an installation there. It was so many people's favorite experience and everything. We felt like we did that, and we didn't want to just rehash that, but we wanted to capture the spirit of it a little bit, of that idea of like you could see something on both sides of the river, right? If you're in Northern Kentucky, you could look over and see beautiful art, and people could share that experience on the Cincinnati side as well. So that's really where the drone idea of having multiple nights of shows really came from, is the idea of kind of wanting to do something. That's not to say we would never light up the Roebling again, but we just want to make sure we're bringing back enough that's familiar for people in the event, but still keeping it fresh and doing some new things.
One of the key elements of what's happening is a large mural that's being painted, right? That's underway right now, right? It's starting.
Yeah, absolutely. So, earlier this year, there was a demolition of the Millennium Hotel right across from the convention center, and right really kind of adjacent to the 8451 headquarters. And this was, maybe only a month or so after I'd gotten to town earlier this year. And as soon as that demolition happened and the giant wall there was exposed, people started, tagging us on social media, just being like, hey, Blink, like there's this giant like cement wall that was just unveiled, like please do something about it, which we kind of took up the challenge and said, like, can we do something this big? Because that wall is over 17,000 square foot of, canvas space. And we said, well, if we're going to do it, we need to bring in a mural artist that knows how to do super large scale public murals. And we need to make sure we're bringing someone in that's going to bring a lot of attention, because this location is directly outside the convention center. It's right there on Fifth Street. So a lot of people pass by, that wall on their way into work downtown or to visit downtown during the weekend. And so we kind of went out there and almost kind of, we're after our white whale. We kind of put together a list, myself and Andrew Salzburn over at our partners at Agar, said, who's our dream list for this project? Andrew oversees a lot of our mural program for us, and the team at Agar do an incredible job curating the murals that we bring to Blink. And we both kind of said Tristan Eaton, who's a mural artist who's based out of Los Angeles, has some roots in Detroit in the Midwest. But Tristan Eaton, if you're not familiar, I recommend, researching some of his work. I became most familiar with his work for a public mural that he did in Deep Ellum in Dallas last year. This really incredible project. I recommend you guys checking it out. But what's great about Tristan is he can do gigantic murals, but he's a big history guy. He loves learning things about cities. And so when he did this project in Deep Ellum in Dallas, he went to a lot of the history centers that are there in that area and really incorporated a lot of undertold stories from like the community and the the culture of the Deep Ellum neighborhood. And so we reached out to Tristan's team and started talking to him about this project. And we're really just thankful that he had the time commitment for this, because this is a wall that takes literally weeks to paint. And has,
and it'll be going on all during Blink, so people can watch him at work.
That's right.
Have you revealed what the mural looks like?
Not just yet. So,
I was like, can I see that?
Yeah, so no images are being revealed just yet. You know, most of it's going to be, you're going to see it being created live. So I've seen a little sneak preview of what Tristan's planning on doing here. But a lot of his work, like I said, is once he gets, you know, into town and into a community, he likes to learn a little bit about it. So he's spending his time when he's not up on that wall painting over the next couple weeks, also just learning a little bit about Cincinnati, talking to people about what's important about this region and what's unique about our culture here, and using that to kind of inform the collage work that he does here. So he didn't even come with the 100% vision totally in his mind of what exactly it's going to look like. He came with most of it kind of roughed out, and then he's going to be filling it in with his team over the next couple weeks.
How big is his team?
So it's him plus, I believe, three or four folks that are going to be up there. So they're going to be working. They're starting this week. The wall is all primed and painted. So if you go by there, you'll see that it's at least white and ready for paint application now. We have multiple lifts that are over there, and it's going to be he and his team kind of grinding on it, you know, over the next couple weeks. Like you mentioned, he's going to be working on it throughout Blink Weekend, which we think is a really incredible opportunity to see a mural at this scale being produced in real time. So if you have some time, you know, during the day, you want to walk by, check it out over the next few weeks, you'll see it being created right in front of us. Yeah. And there'll be a big kind of dedication ceremony that'll be kind of a post-Blink activity that we're looking to do, that we're really excited about unveiling it to the city.
That's amazing to think that's going to be going on while people can be downtown to watch.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you said his name is Tristan Eaton. He comes into a community. He wants to learn about it before he starts putting the concept together. So you're new to the community.
Sure.
And it doesn't seem like you've had a lot of time probably since you took on your job and you had 8 months to put together this massive event.
Yeah.
What have been the pleasant surprises for you? Being a new guy in town.
Yeah, I love that question. One, I'll be very candid and say, like, yes, so a lot of my time has been focused on hitting the ground running with this event. A lot of my time, candidly, as like an outsider when I first got here, was spent trying to make connections with the creative community and the artistic community here in Cincinnati. I've been very blessed and fortunate, you know, to get to meet a lot of incredible, you know, artists and creatives that have been doing great work here in the city. Some folks that have long-lasting legacies here, but also some folks on the emerging artist side that are kind of that next generation of people that are going to be coming. So a lot of my time has been spent like getting to know that community and trying to introduce myself and make sure that, you know, I'm bringing as many people into the collaboration as we can. From just like a personal standpoint, the things that like I've enjoyed is like I said, when I first got to town, like the Bengals were rocking. It was Super Bowl time. Like I remember the first like time when
that's
I really...
That's how we always are.
Listen, like not long after that, I remember I was invited out to a Bachfest party and I was like, listen, like people of Cincinnati don't even need a reason to celebrate. I was like, let's just like goat's beer. Let's not think too much about this. Let's all go out and have a good time. So like what I love is just there is that celebration, right? Like I mentioned I'm from Texas. I lived in New Orleans for a little while. And I feel like there's a lot of like that down in New Orleans too, of just like, hey, any reason to go out and celebrate, have a good time. Like we love that. And so that's been like a fun surprise for me too. And you know, you find your little places, right? Your little spots. I'm a big movie fan. I go see a lot of movies when I have some free time. So the Esquire Theater up in Clifton has been like a really like, you know, fun place for me to like go and check out. I can luckily walk or ride my bike from my house there. And so, you know, finding those little moments and those little places of like, you know, oh, this feels like my own spot, or this feels like something that's, you know, discovery point for me, has been really fun. And right now I'm just enjoying the nice weather. Listen, it doesn't get this cool in Texas until like December. So
we're having
like
a true fall.
Yeah.
And it's perfect for painting a mural.
I was about to say.
A little chilly at night. But
yeah. We were talking to some artists and just like, yeah, this next like, you know, 10 days is a good time to be outside and just enjoying this this fall weather. So I'm just trying to get outside, ride my bike as much as I can and enjoy the weather, because yeah, I'm still usually sweating it down in Texas right now.
How much logistics do you have to do? Parking, weather, like how much you have to like pay attention to?
Yeah, you know, so myself and, you know, our event operations team over at the chamber, and then all of our partners, you know, we have to think about kind of all the aspects of taking over, you know, 30 plus city blocks inside of a, you know, a downtown and kind of urban core core environment. So, you know, a lot of our time spent thinking about that. So how do people move about space safely, right? How do we make sure that, you know, there's, you know, accessibility for things like transportation, getting around? How do we make sure that everyone that comes to the event, you know, goes home safe and happy at the end of the night? And so a lot of credit there is due to our partners at the City of Covington, City of Cincinnati. We work really hand in hand with, you know, public safety officials, and a lot of credit's due to our event operations team at the Chamber, our Vice President of Events and Experiences, Maddie Regan, Spencer Mapes, Rob Weidel. All of our event team is really, they're grinding away right now, and they've been, you know, hand in hand with me. You know, I have the pleasure that I get to focus on a lot of the creative side, a lot of the community building side, a lot of sort of the business development side of it. And I have them as sort of my other half to go through and go, okay, all this is taken care of, right? We got our permits, we got our, you know, logistics, we got all of our production orders in, and they help, you know, really knock out all those details. But it's a big lift, you know, it's no small, you know, team that has to pull this off. Like I said, this week is the time that all of our technical partners come in from out of town.
It's like a wedding. Like, this is the big week, and then a little lull, and then it happens.
That's basically it, right? So like the team has to scale up. And so we're out there running around trying to make sure everything's, you know, in order. We have, you know, everything in place to pull off and execute this thing at the scale we want it to.
I've talked with a lot of people who plan big events, and the common theme is that at some point, mm-hmm. it like takes on a life of its own, and you're just holding on for dear life.
Yeah.
Has that happened yet, or when does that happen for you?
I think it's happening. Like, I think I'm experiencing it. Like, literally, like, today is like a little bit of that. Like I said, you know, it's it feels like, you know, the wheels are in motion, things are going, people know what to do. It's just a lot of execution. And then you're just, you know, you're putting out fires, right? I make the joke that it feels like you've either just gotten punched in the gut, or you're getting ready to get punched in the gut, right? Like, you always have that uneasy feeling of just like, what is the thing that's like going on right now that I don't know about, or great, the team's just taking care of that and I never had to hear about it. Those are the good ones, right? And
can you give us an example of something that you were like, oh crap, I got to do this now?
I'll give an example, you know, just from recently. Our team at Agar, who oversees our mural painting program with all the incredible mural artists that are coming in, right? They have to coordinate a lot of paint just to be delivered, right? Uh-huh. So think about like that Tristan Eaton mural, for instance, that I mentioned, 17,000 square foot has to be covered in paint. And so working with the paint suppliers to make sure all that paint and the exact style and color that the artist wants for that mural that is, oh, by the way, still being developed in his mind. Exactly, right? We have to make sure that we get all those things, and that we deal with all the things that just normal businesses are dealing with right now, right? Like labor issues, supply chain challenges, logistics, you know, problems, right? And we have to make sure that that stuff gets here on time so that we're not missing the schedule, because we do not have a lot of time built in for extra, you know, issues and things like that. So yeah, like, you know, paint delays are things that we've dealt with in the past week. That is, you know, just those things you can't plan for until you're told, like, actually, we don't have that color and that style that you need for that giant mural. But we'll figure out how to get it.
How many gallons of paint did it take to?
Oh gosh, you know, I don't have the quote on me. We're going to do all the math afterwards and release a blink by the numbers, because yeah. I do think things like that are interesting. You know, most of our mural artists work, you know, with, you know, spray cans. We work with Montana cans mostly, and so we have a giant order in from them. But just even priming that wall is just, you know, we're talking dozens of gallons, you know, of paint, just to even prime that wall and to get it in a place where it can be a blank coat. No, unfortunately not. But I mean, we don't make those last minute, but no, it's a, you know, it's a pretty large scale operation that's needed to pull that off. And that's across everything, right? The amount of scissor lifts, generators, just, you know, cable drops, like all those things that, you know, are needed to execute things on the back end. And then we also need to figure out where those things are going, right? So parking coordination, thinking about making sure that we have all of our property permissions and all of the basic, you know, rights. The checklist for it is long and extensive. And, you know, the good part is we get to, you know, build good processes and good documentation so that we can hopefully scale and do this thing, you know, even better in future years. I like to remind the team we're doing pretty well, given that this is the only third year that we've done this. There's still lots of opportunities to learn and develop this thing more over time.
I do feel like we have to, like, get back to work.
Sure.
Seems. But okay. So if there's one last question.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that people need to go see besides the drone show,
sure.
That seems very special.
Yeah.
What's the one thing?
Oh my gosh, it's so hard to pick the one thing. It really is.
Like your children.
No, it is. It's tough because, like, you know, we've seen some of these projects from inception to now reality. I'll tell you the one thing that when I share with people seem to get pretty excited about, and that's what we're doing kind of on the Court Street area and Court Street Plaza in particular. So there's a pretty well-known mural there. That's the Toy Heritage mural. I don't know if you're familiar.
I love that one. It has orange blossom on
it. Yes, there you go.
Strawberry shortcake. strawberry shortcake was my thing, and orange blossom was the hardest strawberry shortcake doll to get.
I love it. That's why I bring this one up, is because so many people tell me that that's their favorite mural in Cincinnati, because I don't know, just evokes so much joy and happiness. And Jonathan Queen, the original mural artist, just did such a good job rendering, and the team at Artworks who executed on that just did such a great job achieving that mural. And it was one, when I got to town, I'm a big like pop culture movie nerd, like I said, and so when I got to town and I saw that, all the Star Wars figures, you know.
And I have to correct myself, Kenner.
Kenner Toys,
Kenner.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, all the former Kenner employees.
We would never hear the end of that.
Yes. I'm sorry to the Kenner community out there.
No, no, no. We want to credit them all appropriately. The Kenner toys. But anyway, so, you know, when I saw that mural, I was like, oh my gosh, we need a like projection map on in this mural. And so what we're doing here in just, you know, 9 days is we actually have worked with the original mural artist, Jonathan, to help source all the vintage toys that are in that mural. And then what we did is we had a local 3D artist, Annie Burke, 3D scan all of those toys. And then Annie got that 3D scan so that we had full turnaround images of all the toys that were accurate to the original vintage figures. And we got that over to an international projection mapping artist that goes by Graph Mapping. His name's Richard, and he's coming over from Spain here next week, and he's going to be projection mapping onto that mural. And I got a little preview of it earlier this morning, and I think that one is really going to hit with people because it's just going to be fun. It won't quite be Toy Story, but you'll see the toys come alive in like a way that like I think is going to really excite people.
Fantastic.
You didn't know you could get Orange Blossom from me. She's in my actual closet in my bedroom.
Now I know, Sherry. Yeah, that would have been much easier for me. Just I'll text you next time.
I need to antique toy store in the Midwest looking for some of these things.
But I love that one for so many reasons, mostly because it is a true collaboration, right? There are so many people that helped make that one possible, from the original artist to the 3D artist who had to have a drone photographer come out to capture that scale mural, and then the international artist that's working to animate it and bring it to life. So I'd say if you're in and around like the Court Street area, check that out. There's going to be a whole lot of other things going on that block throughout the weekend, but that's really kind of the anchor of that installation.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I want to leave everyone with this idea. The Inquirer is going to have a lot of the things. We're going to have these maps. I really do recommend, having been to the Blinks before, that people sit down and really look at what you want to do. It's impossible the night of. It is very crowded to say to yourself, it's not a last minute. If you really want to do this right, it's not a last minute planning thing. Even if you don't see anything, sit down, kind of map out like what you want to see and what you want to do. The closer we get, the more content at Cincinnati.com you're going to be able to find. And really, it's been everywhere. Like, I do feel like I know a lot about Blink. I've seen it almost every day. But thank you for coming and sharing like some of your tips. And I cannot be more excited about this mural.
Good. Well, thank you so much for having me. Seriously, we're so excited. And we just can't wait to see people lining the streets again here in a few days.
Well, you guys, I think that you can tell that I could not be more excited about the toy mural. So I'm revealing my inner child today. I have to say, we're going to segue out of talking about Blink, and I'm going to let Burl, you guys, you can't see him. This is a thing with us we like to describe. Justin was here in all Blink, you know, merchandise. He had a sweatshirt on, a hat, all Blink kind of themed. And Burl, it seems like fallout to me. I have jeans and like army green shirt on today because it's fall, but Burl's wearing bright pink. How come?
Well, those who know me know that I don't dress very colorfully.
No.
I'm pretty, you know, most of my clothes are dark. We talked about the one time I had to buy white pants.
Yes,
we won't go
see?
There again.
Yes.
Right? Ask me how many times I've worn them since. Zero.
Zero.
But it is fall.
It's fall.
Okay. But anyway, so I'm wearing
pink
today.
You'll need them for next year's dinner blog.
It is October. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I'm once again doing Real Men Wear Pink, which is a fundraising effort for the American Cancer Society during the month of October. We are trying to raise money as a group to further the breast cancer research that has taken that diagnosis and over the years moved it so that it's not as fatal as it used to be. And if people get early detection. It's usually something that they can get through where 10, 15 years ago, that wasn't the case. So it's a good cause. It's one I believe in strongly. I've had relatives and friends affected by this. And so I hope that people support breast cancer research any way that they can. But if you want to support Real Men Wear Pink, I think what we should do, Sherry, is we can put a link to our Real Men Wear Pink fundraising page.
Definitely.
In the story that goes with the podcast this week. So if people want to support that, they can do that. And I would be very grateful. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that if you haven't experienced it yourself, you probably have a friend or a family member who has. It touches so many people. And I couldn't be more excited about trying to raise some money this year to further the research.
How much money did you raise last year? A lot, right?
I did pretty well. I don't want to get into the actual numbers. Oh, okay. My goal is 10,000 as an individual. Okay. Our Real Men Wear Pink goal is north of 200,000. And, you know, we got some fun people. Our favorite former PIO, which is public information officer from the Cincinnati Police Department, Steve Saunders, is...
that's going to be a juggernaut. I don't know.
I think he's going to be tough to beat. You know, Chief Isaac did it before he retired, and now Captain Saunders is stepping into his place.
Because we have a female interim chief, that's why.
That is why. And, you know, if they do what they did last year, they had, like, pink highlights to their uniforms, which were really, really yeah. cool. Speaking of chiefs, Michael Washington, the fire chief, mm-hmm. is doing it. David Fulcher, former Cincinnati Bengal, is a real man who wears pink. Dean Gregory, you know, there's quite a...
Should we be listing your competition?
Sure. You know, I need the help. I mean, these are some heavy hitters. This is only my second year doing it. And but no, I did well last year. I'm hoping to beat my record this year, and I'm off to a good start. But if our listeners want to help me, you know, I would appreciate it. So,
and I definitely will put a link in this week's story to make it easy for everyone to help out. I will be donating before the end of the day. There was a glitch last night. It was up in the middle of the night, and I was like, "Ooh, let me donate." And
really,
a little glitch, but maybe it was me. Yep.
Well, it's a good cause. Lots of good causes this time of year, obviously, but. So there you have it. That's why I'm wearing pink. And
you're going to wear pink every day?
That is the rule, right? Every day that I'm in the public or in the office, I will be wearing pink.
I'm going to issue a challenge. How many days do you have to do this? All of
30,
October?
All of October, yeah.
I'm going to issue. You ready?
What?
Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. Every day, you have to take a picture of your pink, of what pink you're wearing, and I need you to post it on Twitter and with a link of how we can donate so we can remember.
That's a good idea.
So we can remember. So then we can see 30, your pink wardrobe for 30 days.
So as we record this, it's already the 4th. So it, yeah.
I'll let you start.
So there's
going to
be
okay.
some, obviously, some like repeat outfits because I think I probably have about 5 or 6 pink shirts or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
Although a friend of mine sent me a link to where you can get this like hot pink sport coat.
Oh, you need this.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. If you're going to buy white pants, you might
as well buy my white pants.
You might as well buy a hot pink sports coat.
Who even am I?
That's because you do the podcast now with me.
Oh,
it's
my
the fashion
gosh.
Is
All
seeping
right.
in.
Well,
all right, good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck. Real Men Wear Pink, and we're going to help get everyone to the 200,000 mark.
Yes, and if you don't want to wait to get to that story, all you have to do is Google Cincinnati Real Men Wear Pink. It'll take you right to our group page. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, if the Enquirer's written something you haven't liked and you don't want to donate to my campaign, there's like more than 20 other men who are fundraising.
Or if you love the Enquirer, you do
right?
it under our
yeah,
name.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But, you know, as long as I beat Captain Saunders, I'll be happy. That's my personal goal.
And I'm not throwing down any money on that bet.
He did a pancake breakfast fundraiser.
Oh, we're going to have some brainstorming
at District 1, I think. Yeah, I think it was yesterday.
To be fair, that sounds really fun.
Doesn't it, though? So I got to step it up. But anyway. Well, thanks for asking about that, Sherry.
All right, you guys, that's it for another episode. We'll see you next week.